Radio Netherlands, the home of high frequency since 1927.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
这是荷兰广播电台在荷兰向您广播。这是荷兰广播公司的广播节目网节目。
That's right. It's Media Network, Radio Netherlands' weekly communications magazine with Jonathan Marks.
Hello, Diana Janssen and I are back again with half an hour of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. You might want to have a pen and paper handy, or better still, look for a tape recorder, because we're going to give you full details of the summer Radio Netherlands schedule starting on March the 26th.
We start at home in an interesting development last Friday. For some time now, Radio Netherlands has been investigating the market for Dutch speakers living outside Holland. A growing number of people are working in companies that require them to travel for extended periods outside the Dutch border. Audience research shows that they appreciate being informed of national and international developments in their own language. Only Belgium and the Netherlands provide anything like a constant radio service throughout the day. Deutsche Welle in Cologne also has a daily Dutch language program, but that's mainly aimed at listeners inside the Benelux.
Towards the end of February, Radio Netherlands launched an experimental program specially designed for listeners on the Spanish Costa Blanca in a joint venture with the commercial station Radio Benidorm. After just a few weeks of operation, it's clear that local relays are extremely popular, with the 60,000 or so Dutch speakers in the region.
Radio Benidorm, en el 103.8 de FM.
Dit is Radio Nederland Wereldomroep, met actualiteiten, nieuws uit Nederland en muziek.
In samenwerking met Radio Benidorm.
That's what it sounds like on a small portable radio right on the beach. Project organizer is Joop Heinz.
I can say now that the reactions are overwhelming. We started on the 20th of February and, we are about 3-4 weeks on our way now. And believe it or not, we have had 1,200 reactions so far from Dutch-speaking people in the Costa Blanca who say, please, Radio Netherlands, stay in Benidorm. We like your program.
Yes, there's been quite a queue of people streaming into Radio Benidorm's office to show their support.
For some months now, Radio Netherlands has been developing plans to provide a television service for that same group of people, taking a selection of the best programs of Dutch domestic public TV and adding extra material, especially for Dutch viewers living abroad. Lodewijk Bouwens, managing director of Radio Netherlands, says it's a logical move.
Well, television is, of course, not new for us. As you know, we work for networks like CNN and we make our specials and feature programs, documentaries. And what's one of the nicer things of today is that both television satellite time and production costs are becoming much lower, much more affordable, depending, of course, on the type of television that you want to make. When digital compression comes to satellite circuits, then you can fit much more channels in the same space. So, of course, also that will be cheaper in the long term.
At the Radio Netherlands Training Center in Hilversum, a study is also going on to look at cheaper production methods. Can you use a computer worth $10,000 to make professional television programs?
In the training center, we have a power PC that can do things which you normally can do with equipment that is worth several millions of guilders. And of course, if we use that, we could do a lot more than the traditional broadcasters do on television scenes. And also that will be an important cost aspect. We prove that we make good features by winning prizes at several television festivals. And we sell lots of programs, for example, on the MIP and MIPCOM in Cannes. So we are not new on the market, one could say.
Right. So when will this external satellite television channel be started by the public Dutch broadcasters?
Oh, well, if I had the choice, I would have started yesterday. But there's some pressure, of course, because in the Netherlands at the moment there's a lot of political discussion about the future of the public broadcasting system in Holland. Besides that, Veronica, which is at the moment an important public broadcaster, is going to be commercial in autumn this year. We'll have to hurry, I think. And that's nice, because if you think too long about a plan like this, you'll spoil it by making rules and thinking of all the aspects. It's better to be creative and start and make it a pilot, an experiment.
For many years, Radio Netherlands, better known here in Holland as the Wereldomroep, made a cassette compilation of programmes for relay on television stations in the Dutch Caribbean. But gone are the days when viewers will tolerate news programmes that are weeks old. Satellite delivery is the only way to go. The Dutch domestic public broadcasters have also been toying with the idea of a satellite channel, partly to compete with a growing number of commercial satellite channels that are aiming their programmes at Dutch speakers on this continent, particularly the Benelux.
RTL 4 and 5 are the oldest competitors, but later this year they will be joined by SES Television, backed by ABC Television out of New York, Arcade Television, financed by one of Holland's largest record companies, which also owns Radio 10 Gold, and of course Veronica Television, which will leave the public broadcasting fold by September the 1st. At present, there are three national public television channels in the Netherlands. But at a busy press conference on Friday, March the 10th, NOS chairman André van der Lau announced the start of a study into a fourth channel, this time satellite delivered.
We never know what will happen in the future. Perhaps a nice marriage is possible between our plans and the of the Wereldomroep. But our intention is, but we have to study it, to present a program of the best of the three existing Dutch channels. It's more or less strange that many thousands of people living in other countries, in Dutchmen, I mean, in other countries than our own country, can't receive the Dutch television. For instance, the commercial programs of RTL 4 and 5 you can watch on satellite. That's not possible for the public broadcasting.
Which satellite do you want to use? Do you also want to use the Astra?
Oh, that now you're going one step too far. We have to study that. We have to study the technical consequences, financial consequences, and so on. But we have an idea of the theoretical, but we didn't make any decision because we have to study it first.
Do you have an idea when you want to start?
Perhaps this year, beginning next year, but that depends on the results of the study.
Van der Lau did announce concrete measures to force the various public broadcasting organizations to work together. At present, there is little cross-promotion between the channels, so if you watch Nederland 1, and that's the first Dutch TV channel, you have no idea what's on the other two.
Coordination between our channels has to be improved. We will do so. Coordination on each separate channel, but also coordination between the three channels. And so that means that you can deliver the viewer in a more consistent way a very well-balanced program.
Can you force the broadcasters to work together?
Well, of course, we try to convince them to do so. But if they don't want to cooperate, you can force it. But, of course, in the end.
How do you want to do that, then?
By money.
In fact, as far as the viewer is concerned, there should be an increased value for the license fee. At $120 a year, it's one of the lowest in Europe.
The NOS says it'll fight off commercial competition by increasing sports coverage on the second television channel and improving news coordination on the current affairs network, Radio 1. It's clear, too, that Van der Lau is working on a more long-term plan, which includes pay-per-view.
For the BBC, it's now possible to participate also in a business-like way in this new kind of media. That is impossible for us now, looking to the laws in Holland. We want to change that. And, for instance, pay-per-view and so on.
Call the answer line, where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
On Wednesday at 16 hours UTC, Senator Jesse Helms, chairman of the US Senate Foreign Relations Committee, held a press conference in Washington to outline his proposal for reorganizing America's foreign policy bureaucracies. In addition to proposing the elimination of the U.S. Agency for International Development and the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Senator Helms would also eliminate the U.S. Information Agency.
We propose to eliminate the U.S. Information Agency and put its exchange and broadcast functions under this new State Department. And our plan will create an Undersecretary for Public Diplomacy who will coordinate the more than $1,500,000,000 appropriation that federal agencies spend each year on international exchanges and make certain that the exchange and broadcasting functions paid for by the American taxpayers reflect American policy.
So under Senator Helms' proposal, the Voice of America, now part of the USIA, would become part of the US Department of State. The Clinton administration's already indicated its opposition to the axing of the US Information Agency, but Senator Helms claims he has enough votes in Congress to approve this proposal. There will be congressional hearings and final votes to determine if the VOA does indeed become part of the State Department. Now to what you've been saying to Media Network.
Hi to Marcy Pearl, who lives in Carrollton in Texas in the USA, who says she's a regular listener to this program. In fact, she gets the first edition of the show as she wakes up ready to go to work as a night shift nurse. Thanks for the feedback. And to several other callers on the answer line, Hilversum 724222, like this one.
Jonathan, my name is Peter Walsh from Glenroy, Australia. I'd like to inquire whether any provision has been made for blind and visually impaired people with this new database technology that's being used on, certainly on FM in your country and also on shortwave, this concept of putting information on a screen. After all, as a blind person myself, radio is my medium, and I feel sad that I'm missing out on information that sighted people can read and I can't. Secondly, you did do a survey a couple of years ago of manufacturers regarding their capacity to adapt technology, a shortwave technology for blind people. Has there been any response from manufacturers to your survey? Thanks very much, Jonathan, and keep up the good work.
Well, Sony did put a small blip back onto the keypad of its new digital shortwave receiver line to help a blind person find their way around the keyboard. But as far as RDS is concerned, most of the applications have been in the car radio field. More and more hi-fi tuners do offer RDS, but that's usually limited to the name of the station. Nobody's really exploiting the full potential of RDS, simply because even cleverer technology, in the form of digital audio broadcasting, is to be launched officially in some countries by August of this year. Grundig in Germany told us it's a question of customer demand. Most of the profits made in the shortwave receiver market are made through sales of portable sets under $150, and adding extras for the visually impaired would be difficult. However, maybe the DAB market will offer more creative solutions.
Okwal Jonathan Oturi lives in Buta Bute in Lesotho, and that's in the southern part of Africa. He notes the following.
I've studied the guides I got from you and from the BBC about choosing a shortwave receiver. I note that you disagree on some points, although the radio I have scores well in both reviews. I do think there's a worrying trend, though. Not enough is being done, in my view, for analogue sets, especially for listeners in Africa. A lot of stations here still use the tropical band, but an increasing number of radios imported from the Far East start their coverage with the 49-meter band. I think in developed countries, the FM craze is taking hold, as well as a lot of interest in satellites. But remember that in Africa, FM does not have the same reach. It's fine for people who live in cities, but I think people in rural areas will miss out. If you have any influence on manufacturers, kindly tell them not to neglect the tropical band. I can afford a digital radio, but for most people it's beyond their budget.
Point taken, and we will pass it on. As far as differences between the receiver reviews are concerned, well, I suppose it depends on the criteria. We're pretty tough on receiver manufacturers at Radio Netherlands, and we compare value based on the world market. We're not allowed to carry sponsored messages, and if we find faults, we simply report them. Things have been rather quiet on the receiver front lately, but things are about to change. Grundig has shown two new analog portable receivers at its spring show for dealers here in the Netherlands this past week. The Yachtboy 207 and the 217 are clearly based on their predecessors, the 206 and 216, but they have been restyled. The radio section is identical in both sets. The more expensive 217, though, has a built-in clock and timer. The battery consumption turns out to be very economical. The radios that we saw that were only samples, we'll buy an off-the-shelf model in April when they become available. The price in Germany has been fixed at just under 100 German marks for the Yachtboy 207 and around 130 Deutschmarks for the Yachtboy 217. Next week we'll have more on DAB as an important conference takes place in Switzerland. Meantime, to answer a question from Mike Hamilton, who lives in Singapore, we cross to Lou Josephs in Boston, USA. Mike wants to know whether digital audio broadcasting is progressing in the United States.
Well, when the NAB meets in April in Las Vegas in the first week of the month, around April 10th through the 14th, you'll find a station operating on 1660, transmitting in digital and in normal AM stereo.
Well, what sort of power?
Well, the 10-kilowatt transmitter will be operated non-directionally. So over the evening hours, it should be heard in a fairly large area across the western United States and the Midwest, possibly even out to the East Coast, since it is a clear channel.
You mentioned a while back on the program the FCC was thinking of expanding the bands. That was all put on hold. Still on hold?
Still on hold. No one has yet, stations have not yet been authorized to use the band as of yet, and there's still a waiting list. On top of that, the FCC is also under the new Republican Congress edict not to pass any regulations, and any of the regulations they did pass within the last 6 months are now being reviewed. So everything's pretty much up in the air on a lot of issues.
Would that also apply to the emergency broadcast system?
Yeah, there's a possibility that EBS implementation under the new system may be delayed at least a year.
And now let's pause for another quick link-up.
It's time again for the O.J. Simpson trial, brought to you today by Rinse Away Detergent. Rinse away, it gets the blood out. Today's guests, Marcia Clark, comedian Cato Caitlin, and O.J.'s neighbor and escape artist, Rosa Lopez. And now, here's your judge and host, Lance Ito.
Thank you. Great to be here. I don't want to say this trial's long, but when it began, I had no facial hair.
Well, the O.J. Simpson trial has resulted in one brilliant idea. When he's not scouting for us, Lou Josephs works at a radio station, WXLO, in central Massachusetts.
About a week ago, we decided to send Judge Lance Ito, who's hosting the trial of the century in Los Angeles, the O.J. Simpson trial, which is pretty much seen everywhere here on CNN, entertainment television on cable, court TV on cable, plus the over-the-air networks, one of our coffee mugs, because his was kind of ratty-looking. And lo and behold, at 1800 UTC on a Tuesday, the judge was drinking out of one of our coffee mugs.
So a great form of publicity.
Oh, excellent form of publicity.
Which means, of course, that all the radio station coffee mugs around the world will also be sent, of course, to the O.J. trial.
Now that we've talked about it, I'm sure they will.
Have you got any response so far?
It lit up our phone lines, and we're getting calls from all over the United States, and we're arranging interviews with other radio stations who were interested in how we did it.
Amazing stuff. Now back to Europe.
Norway is the latest country to announce that shortwave airtime is available for rent. The Norwegian Broadcasting Corporation currently operates two shortwave sites, but clearly wants to concentrate their activities into just one. At a place called Fredrikstad, in the southeastern tip of Norway, there's a 350-kilowatt shortwave transmitter and lock periodic antenna. NRK says it will release that for rent by the end of 1996. Time may also be leased on the much larger site at Kvitsøy in western Norway, but Fredrikstad has priority. The Norwegian government has to approve any deals.
Paul Walton in Bromsgrove in the UK asks if the computer-driven answering service has been changed at Radio Netherlands. It's only in Dutch at the moment, but we're thinking about an English-language version. We did change the computer system, though, that was running it, because the first brand proved unreliable. Now we feed our schedule into the computer in the form of a database, and clever software in the system speaks it out as naturally as possible using sampled speech programmed by one of our announcers, Wim Friesen. The system also sends you a fax of our latest times and frequencies, if you ask it. If you want to have a go, and you speak Dutch, call 31 for the Netherlands, then 35-724-299.
Welkom op de frequentieinformatielijn van Radio Nederland Wereldomroep. Dit is het hoofdmenu. Toets 1 voor informatie over frequenties en uitzendtijden als u naar ons luistert binnen Europa.
Radio Netherlands, where creative production lives on.
Summer is not far off, at least if we can believe the weathermen. But no matter what happens near the Earth's surface, summer is certainly coming to the ionosphere in this region of the globe. As of Sunday, March 26th, we'll be making seasonal frequency adjustments to ensure that wherever you are in the world, you can still hear us. There is a very low sunspot count at the moment, which means that shortwave stations are forced to use the lower frequency bands, and that leads to overcrowding.
Pens at the ready, tape recorder started. Let's go with our broadcasts to the Pacific. Times remain unchanged, so at 0730 UTC, look for us on 11895 and 9720 kHz. An hour later, at 0830, 9720 continues on its own. And then at 0930 UTC, 9720 kHz from Bonaire is used, as well as 13705 and 12065 kHz, two new frequencies from the Commonwealth of Independent States. At 10:30 UTC, 13705 and 12065 kHz continue for the Pacific, the Far East and Southeast Asia.
Our service to Europe in English remains at 11:30 UTC in response to thousands of people who told us to keep it at lunchtime, so we will. Look for us on new 9650 as well as the current 6045 kHz at 11:30 UTC for the usual two-hour block. Note that our evening service to Europe stays on 1386 kHz via the Kaliningrad medium wave transmitter, but we move the time back to 2030 UTC. So if you listen now at 9:30 local time in the UK, we'll stay at 9:30. That's the only English transmission from Radio Netherlands which compensates for the start of the summertime. We thought that 10:30 at night would be too late.
English to Asia comes in the usual two blocks, each of 3 hours. From 13:30 to 16:25 UTC, we'll be using 15150 and 9890 kHz from our Madagascar relay station. In addition, the channel of 13700 kHz is available for the first hour, starting at 13:30. That comes from our Flavo transmitter site. In the morning hours, 7305 and 5905 kHz are available from midnight 30 until 0230 UTC, no news there, and the frequencies of 11655 and 9860 kHz between 0130 and 0325 are also on the air. So, no changes to the morning transmissions for the moment.
Africa is next on the list. We sign on at 17:30 UTC using 11655 via Flavo beam to West Africa, as well as 7120 and 6020 kHz via Madagascar beamed to East and Southern Africa. At 18:30 UTC, the list becomes longer, namely 17605 and 15315 kHz are on the air via Bonaire. 7120 and 6020 kHz via Madagascar and 13700, 11655, 9895 and 9860 kHz via the Flavo transmitter site. At 19:30 UTC the list becomes 17605 and 15315 kHz via Bonaire, 7305 and 7120 kHz via Madagascar, and 11655, 9895 and 9860 kHz via the Flavo transmitter site. Finally, to West Africa at 20:30 UTC, look for us on 11655, 9895 and 9860 kHz via our Flavo transmitter site.
Almost through, because that leaves North America now. 23:30 UTC, that's the time we sign on using 9840 and 6165 kHz, both from our Bonaire relay station, as well as 6020 kHz via the Flavo transmitter site here in the Netherlands. The next hour at midnight 30 UTC is pretty easy because everything stays the same. 9840, 6165 and 6020 kHz are the channels. The final broadcast, though, to North America is shifting in time. It's going to move to 0430 UTC to accommodate a new Spanish service to Latin America. The frequencies at 0430 will be 9590 and 6165 kHz. The new summer edition of On Target is now being distributed from Costa Rica earlier than last time, so we hope it will be with you shortly. If you haven't got a free subscription, then do drop us a line and just ask for it.
Radio Netherlands. Continental Talk Radio.
Sydney Gwinnett of Crowborough in the UK dropped us a line to ask what happened to the request for more information about Rhodesia and the strange BBC broadcast during the time just after Ian Smith declared UDI back in the 60s. While the research is proceeding, we got quite a bit of response from Africa and from Colin Miller in Canada, who was in South Africa at the time and kept all the transmission schedules. Anyway, the show is in the advanced stages of preparation. In the meantime, it's not too late. If you remember listening to a programme on the BBC Overseas Service called The World and Rhodesia. Well, to Victor Gunatilak in Sri Lanka now, who has news of what's happening in his part of the world. Victor, I'm going to hear party music in my headphones. Trouble with deliberate interference from the neighbours?
Oh, yes, and they're belting some fine music, which I can't appreciate right now doing the programme with you.
Never mind. What have you been listening to on the radio?
Well, the real highlight for the month has been regular signals from All India Radio's regional station in Gangtok, and that's the former Himalayan Kingdom of Sikkim, which now is a part of India. Well, 3390 kilohertz, that's 3390 kilohertz, is the frequency to look for the station. And regular signals, 1400 to 1600 UTC, that's 14 to 16. And we have English news, that's the national news from Delhi, at 1530 UTC. The frequency, once again, 3390 for this really exotic All India Radio regional station, Jonathan.
What about further east in Southeast Asia? Any signals coming in there?
Oh, yes. The Indonesian stations are still there, despite the fear some years ago we had that they might leave shortwave. Well, when you listen to 3390 for Sikkim or Gangtok, try 3395, that's just 5 kilohertz up, 3395 for Radio Republic Indonesia in Tanjung Karang. And they are on an extended schedule going well past 1800. Well, this should give European DXs a good shot at this small regional Indonesian station.
You mentioned European listeners can hear the Indonesian signals. Do they get much further, though?
Oh, well, a report from my radio amateur and media network listener friend Said in Boputswana. Now, he hears Radio Republic Indonesia in Ujung Pandang at 1950 UTC and the 120-meter band, and that's a rare one. The frequency 2490 for RRI Ujung Pandang around 1915. And also RRI Bengkulu at 22 hours on 3264 kilohertz. The signals do get around, Jonathan.
Especially the low frequencies in these low sunspot conditions. What about Burma? Because, I mean, in terms of international radio listening, I know that Burma has one of the highest listenerships domestically in the world because of the problems with the government. But what about the country's external voice, the voice of Myanmar, as they call it?
Well, it has been regularly heard in South Asia, starting at 1430 and going to 16 hours, and the frequency 5990 kilohertz. But the real disappointment for me has been the complete collapse of the Karen National Union, and that's the Kautule Radio. Well, in fact, we were hoping the station might return, but with the collapse of their bases inside Burma, all 1 Zulu 9, that's the amateur radio stations which came from Kautule or the Karen National Union held areas, have all disappeared. So we are not hearing any amateur radio transmissions from Kautule, that's the call 1 Zulu 9. And of course the return of Kautule radio seems completely very, very remote now, Jonathan.
But what's happening in Cambodia? Because there are various factions there, including the Khmer Rouge. They seem to be on the run, aren't they?
Oh, yes, that's it. And my first reaction was to chase up their shortwave transmitter on 5408 kilohertz. And I'm still getting very strong signals, and there doesn't seem to be any problems for them so far as broadcasting is concerned. Well, signals are very regular, 12 hours to 14 hours UTC, frequency 5408. However, I haven't heard any English transmissions in the last couple of months, Jonathan.
What about the Voice of Cambodia?
Well, the government station calling itself Radio the Voice of Cambodia sent a QSL letter to K. Ratman of Kerala, India. And in the letter, they confirmed the use of 11940 and medium wave 1360 kilohertz for its external service. And the schedule gives midnight to 0115. That's midnight to 1:15 and 12 hours to 13:15 with 15-minute transmissions in English, French, Thai, Lao, and Vietnamese.
Victor Gunatilaka. And that's all for this edition of the program. On behalf of Jonathan Marks and myself, we wish you a very pleasant weekend.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.